All right. Good morning, everyone. Big city, people out late. Here you are. Come on. You can rally. I know you can do it. So it's great to see you all here. Grant, thank you for all that information. Every time you present, I learn something new. And it's actually good news that you're sharing this recently. So that's fantastic to see. So my name is Terry Klein. I'm the immediate past president for ASTO. I also have nothing to disclose, no financial conflicts or anything of that nature. This is a little bit about ASTO. As you heard in the grand opening yesterday, simply the absence of disease is not good enough. We're actually hoping to have a world in which we all can thrive. And you'll see that as part of ASTO's vision as well. And to get us there, we know that we need to completely transform what we do and how we go about doing that, and actually meld some of our worlds. As Linda was saying, the world is changing. It's evolving. I think that's taking us to a better place as we really look at how we can maximize each other's resources and leverage our strengths, fill in those gaps and take advantage of those collaborations. And that's really what this work is about. So as the ASTO president, we are afforded a great opportunity, and that is to issue a public health challenge to all of our colleagues across the country. There are some criteria. You don't get to just name your favorite issue and try to get everyone on board. It needs to be something that actually is of importance. It really matters. It's a public health significance to our nation. It's something that we need to be able to apply public health strategies to make a difference. We don't want to just claim it as an issue, but then have no effective tools to actually make a difference. We need to make sure that we have strategies that will work. And because of the nature of this challenge, it needs to be something that's amenable to those interventions and will show change within a relatively short period of time. And actually, the misuse of prescription drugs meets all of those criteria. These are all of the challenges that we've seen over the last several years with ASTO, and I won't go into those. You can see that we've covered a lot of different territory. And one of the things that we've learned since that very first Walk the Talk, which was led by Judy Monroe, who's the director of OSTILTS now at CDC, is that these have become a little bit more advanced. They really don't finish in a year. They last longer and they carry over, which allows us a little bit of time to see those results. But great work taking place through ASTO. So this president's challenge for 2014 really recognize the kind of ripple effect that we see from the misuse of prescription drugs. We know that it touches a lot of people. As Grant said, one of the grossest elements that we measure are deaths. But for any of us who have seen the direct impact on family members or people in our communities, we know that it has tragic impact on family structure, on businesses, on the health of a community and a state, and I believe our entire nation. So our goal is really to minimize all that kind of ripple effect, but we have done that through this pledge. And the pledge is to reduce the misuse of prescription drugs and associated deaths by 15%. This is how I get a little wiggle room, by the end of 2015. So you just try to squeeze out basically another year of that work. So far, we have 46 states and two territories who have accepted that challenge. Anyone from any of those states on there who haven't quite taken the pledge yet? Anybody? Okay, we're going to count on you to single-handedly bring that about in your state. So I will say, just as you see Florida mentioned on here, Florida's done some great work, as you heard from Grant. So that does not mean that the health department in that state has turned its back. For whatever reason, they were not able to actually take that pledge. So it doesn't mean there's not good work taking place in those respective states. So to begin this work, we actually developed a strategic plan, pulled together about 30 stakeholders representing all of those federal agencies that Grant mentioned that have different pieces of the pie, as well as a lot of other associations. So anyone here, and I know this kind of falls into different categories, it may not hold true, but anyone here work with a substance abuse agency? Would you just raise your hand so I get a sense of that? So NASDAQ was at this meeting. Anyone here work with behavioral health, mental health services raise your hand. I like to see some of those people raising their hands again, so you already have that integration taking place. We have a lot of people who have participated from associations. We have the American Academy of Pain Management also represented there, and had an individual whose life has been touched directly by addiction, and is now firmly on that path to recovery. So we had the individual and the family perspective there as well. So now I ask for a raise of hands. Anyone in this room know anyone who has been directly touched by the misuse of prescription drugs? Okay, almost every single hand in the room goes up. And that really reflects what we know, that this epidemic, as Dr. Frieden has described the misuse of prescription drugs, is touching all quarters. So this strategic map was developed with all of those stakeholders coming together. It contains a lot of information. If you go to the ASTA website, you can get a little more detail on this. Just a quick description of this. The oval at the top is the central challenge. This is what we hope to achieve. The blue rectangles really are our strategic priorities. These are the things that we know need to be done to achieve that central challenge. And what's not reflected on this are about five or six boxes underneath each of those rectangles, which really are the specific strategies for achieving that strategic priority. And then across the bottom, these are the cross-cutting foundational elements that need to be present in every single piece of work that we do in the strategic map. If we don't pay attention to those foundational elements, we're missing something, and it will make us less effective at what we do. So just to put it up there in big letters for you, you can see this is a comprehensive approach, and it really reflects the stakeholders who are present. So if you really want to make a dent in this, you need to pay attention to every single element of this strategic map. That goes all the way over from prevention and education. You can see it working its way over surveillance and monitoring, diversion control, law enforcement, licensure. A lot of public health agencies actually have some regulatory or licensing responsibility, and then over to treatment and recovery. So what we know about this strategic map is we are only as strong as our weakest link, and if we neglect one piece of this, any one piece of this in its entirety, then our approach will not be as effective as it could be otherwise. Now, in public health, as you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that we're doing all of that work ourselves. We really have that kind of assurance model. We want to make sure that it's being done somewhere within our jurisdictions. So these were the pieces of the strategic plan that states kind of grabbed hold of. And I'm going to go down and provide some very specific examples. And as you can see, just by adding up the number of pledges, people were grabbing different pieces of the strategic map. And that might be because someone else is doing that other work. Maybe they don't feel the need really to highlight that in their pledge, or maybe a strength that that particular health department has that some other health department doesn't have, so they felt like they could build on that. So it really respects the individual nature of states who bring different strengths and different weaknesses kind of to the equation and allows them to tailor their own approach. So here's the menu of things that need to be done. Grab a piece of this strategic map, and then move it into action, and make sure that we're paying attention to all of these other pieces. So here are some of the examples, and I'll go through this for each kind of leg or pillar of the strategic map. So you may see your state on there, or you may not, and it may show up in some of the others. But you can see under prevention, and some of these programs may actually show up in more than one place. That's how the state identified it. That's how they grabbed it on the strategic map. And that's how they moved it into action. So to prevention, you see some school-based curricula and programs, prescribing guidelines, a lot of work that's been taking place around that for different populations of prescribers. Prescribing guidelines for primary care, prescribing guidelines for emergency room physicians, really, again, depending on what needed to be done there. Almost all of these really, and again, it was that comprehensive approach that really emphasizes collaboration. So again, when the challenge was first launched, we had some people were saying, well, I don't really have authority in some of these areas. Or we have a separate department of substance abuse, which is really addressing that. So the point of this is really about collaboration. It's pulling our resources and working together. And you can see for some of these, they might fall more cleanly in a more marginalized, separate, isolated way within some other area of state government or federal government. But our goal is to pull all of that together. So you can see a lot of work taking place with the use of naloxone, overdose prevention. I'm guessing that we're going to see those deaths, Grant, go down significantly as a result of the great work that's taking place there. And with the prescribing guidelines for those health departments that don't have licensing responsibility, they are then working with medical associations. Anyone here work with any of the medical associations? So we have a few people who work with those associations, really to make sure that those prescribing guidelines hit the mark, and really to build on the expertise that's represented in those different associations. Monitoring and surveillance, as Grant mentioned, a lot of work taking place with the use of the PDMP, the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program. You can see that reflected in this, in the pledges that were made. And you'll see in another slide as well, but the use of geospatial mapping, hot spotting. So where are our kind of problem areas, our areas that are challenged, where we see high rates of prescribing or high rates of treatment admissions or high rates of deaths? All of those things may tell us something a little bit different, but in public health, we love data. And we know how to use those data. And that's actually something that's come out of this work and the collaboration is that's not true for all other areas of government in terms of how they use data and how they maximize its utility and move it into action. Public health does that very, very well. So that's something we can bring to the table, actually, again, working in partnership with other groups within the state. Around enforcement, and if you went all the way back, I'm just going to go back real fast, you'll see that the areas that have the most pledges are the areas that you would think of typically with public health, right? Prevention and surveillance. Public health does that, does it really, really well. We're all about those things. But then you had some states, too, that were moving into those other areas as well. But fewer states really identifying this. But you'll see, like, the hot spots and surveillance. It's actually showing up in a couple different places on the strategic map. A lot of take-back programs. Of course, this is being changed with some of the federal changes that are taking place where you can take your unused medications to pharmacies. But really, in Oklahoma, an example would be we have a drop-off point at every single police department in each county or the sheriff's office where you can go and put your unused medications and not worry about any kind of inquiry or questions, just to get those out of people's cabinets, out of people's homes, and put away. So they won't be available for diversion within those communities. So good work taking place there. And then treatment and recovery. So again, in the early days of this, I heard a lot of people say, well, that's really not our primary mission in public health. It's really not. And that's somebody else's lane. And I want to make sure that we don't get accused of mission creep. You know, we're very respectful and cautious about that. But the reality is we're about people and we're about the mission. And all of this comes together under that heading. And if we manage to actually limit that supply of prescription drugs and we're not treating recovery, actually not treating people to get them into recovery and help them maintain that path to recovery, then I have great worries about that. So how can we help more people end up on that path to recovery and then stay there? It's an important goal that needs to be part of that comprehensive plan, and we can't miss that. So you can see, again, and public health has entree to a lot of different areas, a lot of work with hospitals, a lot of work with different medical providers. So pushing out ESPRT, the screening brief intervention referral to treatment, evidence-based practice, let's move up that continuum in terms of that continuum of addiction and try to catch people early. Someone shows up in the emergency room three times for different broken bones and they're 28 years old, that should be a red flag. Let's get to work and make sure that we're then doing that assessment and potentially referring that person to treatment. Or if we catch them early enough, the first visit to the emergency room, when we do that, we know they're at moderate or low risk. Simple education can change that trajectory if we catch it early enough. So great opportunities to intervene and actually avoid addiction in that entire cycle that people sometimes find themselves in. So really looking at systems of integrated care, making sure that we are training individuals in the healthcare industry to, one, be aware, be on the lookout, understand evidence-based practices, and make those connections to the appropriate referral sources, whatever those might be. But again, different states doing different things. So I see my colleague from Rhode Island here, Commissioner Michael Fine, so thank you for being here. I see Rhode Island here grabbing one piece of the strategic map, and you've showed up in other places as well, so thank you for your strong leadership there. So here are just a few state examples, and then I'll close out. So Arizona, doing some great work around prescribing guidelines. They didn't do it by themselves. They joined with the medical associations and others, saying here's, one was educating about the nature and the extent of the problem. When you look at these numbers, I mean, they are astronomical. And very, very few states would be able to step forward and say, this is not a problem in my state. So that increased awareness and the data that we have through public health is a first step, actually, in doing that. And then working with those medical associations, and we have got to grab this, take charge of this, and change these trends and these numbers to save lives. And Arizona's done a great job. Will Humble actually has a blog that he puts out on a regular basis, provides updates to individuals about what they're doing, about the progress that they're making, just to keep the conversation and awareness alive. So Ohio, great use of the data. Again, it's a strength that we bring to the table. You can see by looking, this is just an example, which has a patient's treatment history, looking at those morphine equivalent doses and helping to understand patients who may be at risk. They also do the same thing with providers. So who are the top 50 providers in the state who are prescribing more than other people in their specialties? And help us understand that. There may well be a good reason for that. But compared to your peers in the same specialty, what does it mean to be an outlier with that? And again, it just begins that conversation. And if there's a problem that needs to be addressed, then let's address it and be aggressive in doing that. New Jersey, a great story. Anyone here from New Jersey? Nope. One guy scratching his nose back there, almost from New Jersey, but not quite. Great work, Mary O'Dowd, doing there, working with her governor, who had started by issuing an executive order that actually allowed a pilot basis, a naloxone program. And they saw such great results that Commissioner O'Dowd was able to actually change the rules so that they could push that out with all the EMS providers across. This talks about troopers. That's part of the initiative. But also the rules, the public health rules, prohibited the EMS providers from doing that. So again, just a great example how then you can do that, and you put it in the hands of people in every single community. That's pretty cool. And we know that naloxone works and makes a difference. So just a couple quick things about Oklahoma. We started with the governor's task force to really bring everyone together from multiple sectors, law enforcement, medical associations, providers, people who are in recovery could speak from a firsthand personal basis, developed a plan and says, this is what the experts in the state have put together and here's what we need to do. And it has some elements that are very similar to what we do. And then hit the ground running with the prescribing guidelines. We launched a big media campaign and we began our naloxone program and pushing that out. So there's some interesting things that, and I'll just touch on this, with the PDMP, and Grant mentioned this, almost every state except Missouri has one, there's a huge amount of variability in how those programs get used. So in Oklahoma, we actually have real-time data. You put it in, everybody has access to it within 5 minutes. That's good. So it's not a week, it's not a month, it is virtual. But what we didn't have, that was actually created through our Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs, because that's the way the federal grant came down. And that's where it was developed. And frankly, we couldn't have developed it in any other state agency at that time. It really needed to be law enforcement. But that meant that the Department of Public Health and the Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse had no access to that data. Zero. We were prohibited by law from actually helping, looking at, examining, using those data in any way. So we passed a law that now allows these two other departments to do that. And that's a huge strength that we're bringing to the table. The Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs had done a fantastic job of developing the system. They didn't have the resources to really analyze and understand the data in a more nuanced way. So it's a great partnership making a difference. Then some other changes as well. And you'll notice at the very bottom some increased dollars specifically for treatment of prescription drug abuse. Not a lot of money, certainly by state standards, but that was done at a time when we were cutting our budgets across the board because of the recession. So at that very same time, because we had that task force, because we had those recommendations, because we had a comprehensive approach, we were able to get some new dollars for treatment. So that was good news indeed. So last slide, this is really about, okay, so how do we measure this? And there are a lot of different data points. Again, we love those data, and we know that there are lots of different ways to measure that. We had a phone call about 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, somewhere in there, I kind of lose track of time, with a lot of different partners again. Okay, so we've got the challenge out there. We know that there's a kind of a changing environment and world, as Grant described. Which of these pieces best capture that movement? And really what we agreed on was a story and a storyline. So there are different data points tell us different things in that story. So if we're looking at actual prescribing, that tells us one story. If we're looking at admissions to treatment programs, that tells us a different story. And frankly, I was a little disturbed by the drop in treatment admissions. I'm not sure I understand exactly what those data tell us. And generally, when I see that increased trend, for me, I think that's a good thing. I mean, we're getting more people into treatment, especially if it parallels increases in use. So then to see it go down a little bit, that's a little bit of a head-scratcher for me, so I'm going to have to think about it a little bit. So a lot of different ways, and of course that end result around mortality and what that tells us. But the difference in this call, in the beginning of the challenge, at the very beginning we talked about 15% by the end of 2015. I had a few folks said that's just not achievable. Others who know how to kind of put the positive connotations, it's aspirational. So you're not going to make it, but it's a good goal to have. But this last conversation we had was, we're going to make it. We are going to make it. Through these collective efforts of all of these people building on the great work that's taking place, as Grant described, that decline in our country started well before this pledge. So that's really good news. So we want to build on that momentum. We want to help push and reinforce that work and move us across the finish line. So I'm already thinking we don't want to stop at 15%. We want to continue to drive those numbers down because they represent people's lives and they represent family tragedies that we know we can avoid with the right interventions. So that's it. I'll say thank you. Now turn the podium over to my colleague and friend, the executive director, Dr. of ASTO, Dr. Paul Jarosz.